Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. At hundreds of locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
The MMA Gambling Podcast on the Sports Gambling Podcast Network is presented by WinBet. Get started today and you'll get a risk-free bet of up to $500. Terms and conditions apply. Get the details at WYNNbet.com and download the app today. We're also brought to you by PropSwap, America's number one way to buy and sell sports bets. Use promo code SGP on your first deposit and receive up to $500 in bonus cash. That's PropSwap.com, promo code SGP. And finally, we're also brought to you by Underdog Fantasy. Sign up at UnderdogFantasy.com with promo code SGPN and receive a free $25 entry to use in the Best Ball Mania 2 for a chance to win $1 million. That's right, $1 million, UnderdogFantasy.com. And as one friendly reminder, do not forget to download the SGPN app. That's right, we've got an app now, and you can download it in both the App Store or the Google Play Store, so make sure you do that today.
Hi-de-ho, Degenerinos, and welcome to the MMA Gambling Podcast on the Sports Gambling Podcast Network. Episode 51, this one will go out to Ichiro. I believe he was number 51, baseball legend. But mostly this one is going out to all my fellow Canadians. We're on the eve of Canada's Day as I am recording this, so happy Canada Day to all my fellow Canucks and Hosers out there. I would be Jeff Fox, your host. Thank you for coming to the podcast once again. Hopefully you're listening to us on our dedicated feed, the MMA Gambling Podcast feed. If not, if you could pop over there and give us a subscribe, if you want to give us an awesome rating, obviously. Only awesome ratings allowed. If you want to give us a rating review, that would be much, much helpful. If that makes sense, much helpful, sure. Well, we'll go with that. You may know me from such places as the MMA-Manifesto, which is the website I run for MMA exclusive content. So pop over there for all your MMA needs. Even with no UFC this week, we still have plenty of content going up pretty much on a daily basis. And obviously I am a writer and a editor and a podcast host over at sportsgamblingpodcast.com. And I do have a co-host with me. Not a co-host, sorry. I was going to call him a co-host. I forgot. He's an associate host. I don't have anything planned for his intro this week, so I'll just remind everyone that he's the toughest man to ever walk the planet, the baddest purple belt in the world, and the king of the Gogo Plata, Daniel Gumby Vreeland.
You could have added in something about knowing obscure MMA since we're, I mean, I guess not obscure, but regional level MMA, because I mean, yes. Like that is going to be a bulk or at least a chunk of our show today.
It is. This is the obscure MMA podcast episode, you could call it, perhaps. Maybe that's what I will call it when I do production on it. We'll just have to wait and see. But yeah, no UFC this week, no Bellator, no PFL, no Invicta, no what else? What are the big ones? No Cage Warriors, no Ryzen, no what else is the big promotion I'm missing? No, basically all the big ones are dark this weekend. So it's basically just regional promotions, which isn't a bad thing because Dan knows a heck of a lot about these promotions, and there probably are some betting lines that we can take advantage of. Correct?
Yeah, there's a couple in here that I like.
All right. Well, see, he's he's slow playing it, but I think it sounds like he's got something up his sleeve there for us. So we got, what, the big ones this weekend would be what? LFA, Titan, CFFC, are they the biggest North American ones, probably?
Yeah, LFA, Titan, CFFC, I would say are the biggest regional promotions, yeah, for sure.
And what's this EFC I'm seeing? That's what, is that the
that's, EFC? That's South African, and South I will Africa? Say, right. I saw that they had something this weekend, too, and I was, like, a little bit excited, because I usually like to talk EFC. They've had a couple of guys go to the UFC from EFC. I think that's where, so Jared Vandera fought there, even though he's an American guy. JP Bays fought there. You might not remember Gareth McLennan, but he was a South African dude who fought there. Dolce Lugiambula was one of their champions. Ruan Potts fought there. So they've, like, had lots of talent graduate out of EFC and wind up in the UFC. And I looked at this card, and, man, it's not good. I don't know if they're just, like, getting back to events for the first time in a while, if they, like, don't have a lot of guys under. I don't know what the holdup is here. But it is a lot of, like, low-level, mediocre, 50-50 record-type talent. So I actually skewed away from there, because while I usually like to talk about some of their prospects, I have just not seen very much that I would consider a prospect on that card.
Well, that's a pretty damning review of that, because you pretty much will watch anything, too. So if it's... if it's not even good enough for you to watch, then it's got to be a pretty bad event they're putting on.
Well, and I also have to say, I'm not 100% sure how to even watch EFC anymore. They used to have, like, an online way to watch it, and now I don't know necessarily that they have any way to watch it. But, yeah, it's pretty sad state of EFC right now.
But I'm sure that Twitter guy, Gravaka Hitman, will be watching it and putting gifts up. He always has a way to watch all these events. I assume it's he. It could be a she, I guess. But.
Yeah, if Gravaka Hitman captures any big knockouts, that'll be worth checking out. But I will say, as far as, like, watching it in anticipation of, like, a high-level guy who you're going to see in a few years in, like, a Bellator, a UFC, or even a PFL, I don't think you're going to see anything on that show.
No. Dan is our hitman of the MMA gambling podcast. So, all right,
saying for years, that I've been the Gravaka hitman of the podcasting world.
And finally, we're letting the world know he's no longer low key. It's what we're letting the whole world. It's being busted open now to our billions of listeners. I also want to let my grammar's really on a high level today. I want to let you know about WynnBET. Let's blast that open to the whole world, too. WynnBET is bringing you the action of real-life sports betting with the Wynn Las Vegas experience. Get in all your favorite teams, players, and sports games. Join us promos, odds, and parlays are happening right now at WynnBET. Get started today, and you'll receive a special offer up to $500 risk-free sports bet. Terms and conditions apply. Get the details at wynnbet.com and download the app today. Well, while we're at it, let me tell you about another one of our great sponsors, PropSwap. We are brought to you by PropSwap, America's number one app to buy and sell sports bets. Find the best odds at an NBA championship and Stanley Cup futures when you buy directly from other bettors on PropSwap. See a ticket you like but think the price is too high? Submit a bid for a price you think is fair and then buy it. Every ticket purchased on PropSwap can be resold at any time with one click of the button. And PropSwap gives you a suggested price to it to let you know how much your ticket is worth. Last week, a PropSwap customer sold a $100 175-1 odds, Atlanta Hawks to win the Eastern Conference ticket for $6,250 after the Hawks went up 1-0 on Milwaukee. So with PropSwap, your bet doesn't need to win in order for you to make money. It just needs to improve. Think of it like the stock market, but for sports betting. Use promo code SGP on your first deposit and receive up to $500 from giving away extra money again. $500 in bonus cash. Go to PropSwap.com or download the PropSwap app today. All right, I guess we may as well jump right into the regional betting stuff, since that's what we've been alluding to already. First of all, is there any do you normally play, or do you even want to talk about your personal gambling habits? But do you normally play any regional promotions or put any money on anything?
I would say in general, no, because what usually happens is guys who come in as big favorites are usually the ones who are going to win. It's kind of like the lower end of a Bellator card. Like, if you ever look at the Bellator odds on, like, the opening fight or two, it's like negative 800, negative 12,000, negative 750 on just about every single fight. And it's because they know who's going to win. They're not very evenly matched up fights. And for a lot of these regional promotions, you see a similar thing. The one thing I will say is you don't often see that with LFA. LFA does a little bit better of a job with that. But still, you tend to see a lot of favorites win. So the only thing I do tend to do if I am looking to play a regional-level card is I'm usually looking for underdog money. Because usually the underdogs are large enough that, like, even a small play will make you feel good about hitting, you know, like, one or two or you know, like, one out of four even if you find some underdogs you really like. So I did find a couple of favorites in here that I really liked that I'm going to point out. But also, in general, I would say no. You're usually trying to avoid betting on a, you know, take Talita Alencar, who's making her, if I'm not mistaken, her MMA debut this weekend because she's a jiu-jitsu ace. She's betting off at negative 1,200 at Titan FC. And, like, you know, I like her a lot. I was very excited that she's moving to MMA because you're going to get to see more of her. But, like, who would play that number? Who's excited about that number? So, and especially for somebody making their MMA debut, she's fighting somebody who's 0-1-1, so, like, you assume she's going to win, and you got to be excited about it, but, like, at negative 1,200, how could you possibly be excited about that?
Yeah, unless you're a big Money Banks guy, but you don't really want to put a whole bunch of money on someone making their debut anyhow, especially at that, at a number that extreme, because you never know. Let's kick things off with LFA 110, since I have that up on my screen right now. It's going down, Saturday, Silvera versus Murray. Is this a UFC Fight Pass LFA? I can't keep track of where anything is anymore, because I don't watch it all like you do. So
I believe they are on Fight Pass now all the time, and every single one of their events will be until whatever deal they have runs out.
Okay, so there you go. So you can catch it on the UFC Fight Pass, or I'm sure there's other means out there where you can catch it on, Twitter, for instance. I'm sure you'll catch plenty of highlights on Twitter if there are highlights. Now, is there anyone on this card? It's headlined by Joshua Silvera versus Jesse Murray. Is there people on this card that you know about, that you like, that you want to give us info on, or any bets you want to actually make on this one?
Yeah, so contrary to my earlier point where I said I usually like to look through and find just underdogs who are playable on these cards, there are two favorites who I think are being undervalued on this card. And the first one is Marcus Perez. You may remember him from his UFC fame and or lack thereof. And his Joker face, everybody remembers him coming in with his crazy Joker face. Well, he's been released after losing three straight in the UFC to Wellington Turman, Driscus Duplice, and Dalcha Lugiambula. And he's going to be fighting Cristiano Frolich. And while he is betting off at negative 180, and I think that line pretty much exists where it is because he is a UFC vet, I actually think he's probably way better than Frolich here. I've seen Frolich kind of get controlled by people pretty easily. He's fought a much lower level of competition. I'm not really high on Frolich. You know, he's got a loss way back when to Alberto Yuta, who I had like a cup of coffee in the UFC and looked really bad. Carl Albrechtsen and Hayward Charles, who also, you know, not real great. And he's had a long layoff. So I really like Marcus Perez. You know, I'm seeing him on best fight odds right now at negative 180, which I think is probably a good number. So, you know, despite my point about only playing underdogs, I like Marcus Perez in this one. In the other title fight, I actually have a pick, too. I really like Charles Johnson against Yuma Horiuchi. So, Charles Johnson betting off at negative 200. I'm pretty sure this guy will be in the UFC pretty soon. He's like 8-2, or 8-3, maybe. He's got a loss to, like, high-level competition all the way through. You know, like, nobody who beat Charles Johnson did not wind up being, like, a good... Like his last loss came to Brandon Royval, for instance. And the other one was to... do you know Sean Santanella, Shorty Rock? He's fought in, like, Brave CF. And you know,
no.
He's, like, probably, like, the best flyweight on the regional scene who never got signed by, like, a super big company. So, like, Charles Johnson has only lost to those two guys. So, like, I think he's probably a really high-level guy, and it's just going to take, like, a big win in a title fight for him to get that contract, because all of his wins, or at least all of his latest wins, are, like, by really fun, you know, like an anaconda choke and some, like, brutal grounded pound and, like, a rear naked choke. Like, he's a finisher, and he's super exciting, and he's a flyweight, and they could always use more flyweights. Trained at Tiger Muay Thai for a while, so, like, I think negative 200 is probably underestimating him against, like, a Japanese prospect who's been training at Team Oyama, which is where Yuma Horiuchi has been training. But he's only, like, 23. He's kind of inexperienced. So he's going to be, like, while very good, the guy who knows a little bit less here. So I really like Charles Johnson in this fight. So those are my two big ones for LFA 110.
But Charles Johnson, last person he beat was someone named Carly. So he's beating up on girls going into this fight. Are you sure we should pick him?
I thought for sure you were going to make a 1997 World Series joke using Charles Johnson, the Marlins catcher.
No, I don't remember. I don't remember him. So see, that's
man.
Another obscure thing Dan knows.
Man,
no,
you don't know. You don't remember Charles Johnson, the famed '90s catcher. He might not He might not have been on the 97 Marlins. Don't double check me on that one, because I think now that I think about that, that might have been, was Piazza on that team? It was when the Marlins bought everybody. But somewhere in there, the Marlins catcher was Charles Johnson.
There you go. So that's for the flyweight belt, and then what, the main event's Josh Oliveira versus Justin Murray for what weight class is that? That's for waiting for it to load. That sound like it would be light heavyweight to you?
Does that
sound right?
Yes, it does sound like a light heavyweight. But here's the thing I will say about that one is, first of all, I'm not seeing odds anywhere on there. And, like, both of those guys just kind of strike me as, like, your generic... is that fight have been canceled? That fight has been canceled.
Oh, maybe.
Yeah, Tapology just announced...
That must be why we don't see it.
Tapology just announced earlier today that fight has been canceled. So Johnson,
all right, so
now the main event against Horiuchi. So look at that. I gave you a pick on the main event.
There you go. So is Johnson would be your top prospect if you had to pick someone off of this card for UFC success in the future, you would be buying stock in Charles Johnson?
Yeah, I'd like Christian Natibi Dodd, too, who fights way earlier on the card. If I'm not mistaken, he's the brother of Kevin Natibi Dodd, or cousin. He's related to the Natibi Dodd that already is in the UFC. What I've seen from him in, like, the limited amount of regional highlights, like, look good. But, yeah, like, the most immediate impact, Charles Johnson.
All right, there you go. All right, so that's – and basically if a guy wins a belt in LFA, a guy or a gal wins a belt in LFA, they pretty much immediately get signed by the UFC. It's pretty much how it works. So
the reason Horiuchi and Charles Johnson are fighting for an interim flyweight title is because the champ of LFA's flyweight division is fighting on the Contender Series later. So they're not ready to strip him and say he's not the champ anymore, because his next fight after the Contender Series might be back in LFA as the champ. But in the meantime, they got to keep the division moving. So, yeah, like, again, win the belt, get a chance, especially at flyweight. Because, I mean, like, LFA's churned out so many good flyweights. I mean, we mentioned Brandon Royval is, like, you know, the poster boy for it. But they've had lots of great guys come out of LFA. So, I assume winning a belt here is going to be enough for him.
Yeah, that's usually the way it goes. All right, we'll move on to Trophy Day's Eto'o Alice 15, Arena Goliath MMA in France. Who do you like in that one, Dan?
That is one I actually don't know about.
You don't know that one?
Although, hear me out. I do know a little bit about French MMA now, because apparently, you know, MMA is new in France. This is interesting information for everybody who doesn't know about it. MMA
it's just legal now, right?
Yeah, newly regulated in France. And here's the problem they're having. I guess the French Regulation Commission there keeps canceling bouts on all of these regional promotions, saying they're not fairly matched up. So, like, one promotion, like, almost canceled their entire event the other day just because the commission came through and just, like, axed, like, 10 to 15 fights or something like that just on the spot. So, and I don't know if they're doing it just, like, based on record, because as we know, that means nothing, right? Like, you know, if we were doing that, like, Brock Lesnar would have fought none of the guys he ever fought, right, in the UFC, or, you know, like, even Randy Couture would have been undervalued at, like, what, he was 16-10 by the end of his career. He wouldn't have been able to fight anybody. So, I don't know if it's just record-based or if they actually have, like, talent scouts who are like, whoa, this is a squash match, but... yeah, they're having a big amount of trouble over there right now with just, like, pure canceling events. So while you did catch me off guard by talking about an event I did not have any clue about, I do have a little bit of information about French MMA right now.
See? So that's why Dan's here, because no matter where I take this podcast, no matter what dark place I take it, he's always got some kind of information that he can throw at you. So there you go. And yes, LFA, one time I didn't mention, starts 9 o'clock Eastern on, it's Friday actually, I was thinking Saturday's Friday, July 2nd, and is on UFC Fight Pass, like we said. So, all right, let's move on. How about Titan FC 70? It's probably what this, you think biggest region?
I think that's behind CFFC, if I'm being real honest.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, I think so? I'm pretty big on CFFC lately, especially their women's divisions. Like, their women's divisions have been churning out, like, a lot of good fighters, including the person who's, I'm going to forget her name, too, but the person who's stepping in on short notice to fight Sajara Eubanks soon. They've got that Jazuda Vicious, who's fighting on the Contender Series. I'm pretty sure that's where we got both Dawkus brothers came from CFFC. Whereas, like, Titan has given us some people, but I'm not sure anybody who I'm, like, you know, like, the ones I just said are like, way bigger deals.
I wonder where we got those Dawkus brothers from. I wondered if the cat dragged them in or what. Somehow we got some Dawkus brothers ourselves then, but... All right, well, we're doing Titan X anyway, so tough. Titan FC, it's also Friday night, 6 p.m. Eastern, UFC Fight Pass. Main event is middleweight world title. Some guy whose last name has ass in it. Bruno Assis versus Shane O'Shea for the middleweight championship of the world. And then, as Dan mentioned, a very good jiu-jitsu practitioner is making her debut here also. So what can you tell us about this event, what you like, and so on and so on? Go ahead, show off, Dan.
So I do like Bruno Assis. I like his jiu-jitsu. I think he's fun to watch. I'm having a little bit of a tough time picking in that fight. It is, I mean, it's pretty much a pick'em if you look at the lines. And you know, Assis was on Contender Series, and he looked really bad, in my opinion, on that Contender Series, so I was, like, low on him for a while. But that loss wound up to being to Andre Muniz, who we've since seen break Jacare's arm. And he went the distance with Andre Muniz, so I'm starting to feel higher about him. Then you look at his recent records. He beat Rustam Shaziev, who's, like, a jiu-jitsu absolute animal. He beat him at CFF, or at Brave CF. So, like, again, you're like, oh, well, and he beat him by sub, which is, like, extra awesome. Then he turns around and loses to Aaron Jeffrey and Daniel Pereira. So, like, I think if he can get this fight with Shane O'Shea to the ground, who's, like, a fairly inexperienced guy, he's got a really great chance of winning. But, like, I also don't know that he will. So it's, like, it's a very hard fight for me to handicap. So that's one, especially with the odds being so close, I'm kind of just staying away from. One of the ones I do like in this, and I'm going to keep bringing stuff back to flyweights because I do love flyweights, and so we already liked Charles Johnson. One of the people who I really like on this fight card, in addition to Talia Alencar, who everybody should like Talia Alencar, is Andrew Richardson. I really like him. He's an alpha male guy, and as you know, I don't usually like alpha male guys. No. But he, first of all, won his first two professional fights with just, like, one-touch knockouts in under a minute. But he's really more of a submission guy, which is even more fun. So then he's followed that up with rear naked choking a guy. And then his fourth pro fight, this is kind of funny. In his fourth pro fight, he actually won in Global Legion FC by his opponent grabbing the cage too many times and not heeding the warning. And they eventually they eventually just disqualified the guy. So he's only been a pro since 2018, so only for 3 years. He is 4-0. He's got a little bit of an amateur career before that, but he's got very much that, like, alpha male pedigree where he can, like, punch a little bit, but he's also got really good wrestling, and he's, like I said, he's an alpha male guy. Plus, his nickname is the Road Dog, so if you're an old-school wrestling fan, you got to appreciate that. He is fighting a guy who fancies himself a grappler in Robert Echevarria, but I actually don't think he's as good of a grappler, and he's been fighting mostly in Titan from, like, the organization that is, or out of the gym that is, like, down in that corner of Florida. And he, like, has a long amateur career, too, but I've noticed not particularly good amateur career. Since then, he's fought kind of nobodies in Titan FC, and they seem to be building him up. But I really think that Richardson's jiu-jitsu and his wrestling and just the fact that he's going to be in a better position give him a great chance here to pull an upset. Because if you do look at these odds, and this is where I like to hit you, Richardson is actually betting off at plus 185, which is a pretty sizable underdog. And I think if people knew more about these fighters, it would be even money or even Richardson as a small favorite.
So there you go. Get on that quick, because once our millions of listeners get in on Richardson, that number is going to obviously swing the other way, correct?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I think, so not enough people will bet on this fight to swing in. And
no.
That's if you can even find a sports book that's going to take odds, because you ain't going to find this on FanDuel or DraftKings or anybody else. Maybe on WinBet. Check out WinBet.
Check out WinBet.
It is tough to find odds on these, but if you do find odds on these, the numbers might even vary, but I think you'll find them right around the opening line no matter what.
All right, so, is that the only fight you really would be comfortable putting money on? You
yeah.
don't want to put any money on. And Toledo Oliveira Alan Carr, though.
No, you know, you could take Toledo Alan Carr and just throw her in a parlay on everything and see if you can get, like, an extra 40 cents on every single bet you make, because that's pretty much what adding her to a parlay is going to do. But, I think ultimately, the rest of this card kind of doesn't – I mean, like, there's not enough good prospects on here for me to know enough about. Again, I kind of like Aziz in that fight. I think he's probably going to get Shane O'Shea down. But if he doesn't, he's going to look so bad on the feet, I think.
Do we have a future UFC star in the making on this card somewhere?
I think if Richardson comes through and looks as good as I think he will here, he'll be 5-0 and an alpha male guy. That, like – in the flyweight division, that, like, screams contender series, right? Especially if he's gotten finishes
least, yeah.
in all... Yeah, and if he's gotten finishes in all five, like, that's right up their alley.
All right, there we go. We'll move on to CFFC, since Dan is a big fan of CFFC. We got CFFC 98, Cuts versus Lainisi. Cuts is a bad last name for a fighter, though, unless you're dishing out the cuts, I guess. This is Saturday, so finally not one. Basically, the first two were pretty much the exact same time on Friday, which is dumb. You got to spread these things out. This one is Saturday, 7 o'clock p.m. Eastern on the Fight Pass. It's from the 2300 Arena, which I think is where ECW used to go down, ECW, back in the old wrestling days. In Philadelphia. Do we have any title fights here? Yes, we do. Welterweight title fight is the main event on the evening. All right, break down what you can break down in this one. I'm sure you know every fighter, all 22 people on the card, but give us a synopsis.
So I don't know everybody on the card yet, but I do know that I do like Evan Cutts. You mentioned Evan Cutts. I actually am a big fan of Evan Cutts. And he's coming in here as an underdog, worth noting, plus 125. I think he is super underrated because his record doesn't look great. You know, he's got losses to Colton Smith and Sean Spencer, who were a couple of wrestler types that both made their way through the UFC. He's lost to some other guys who could kind of out-grapple him a little bit here and there, but his jiu-jitsu is really fun to watch. He's got great transitions. He works to the back very fast. He's very long for a welterweight. He is 6'1", with, like, gangly kind of looking arms. I think his reach is probably much larger than the 6'1" that he's supposed to have, because he looks like he could, like, itch his kneecaps without bending at the waist. I think he is probably a good pick here for an upset over, like you said, I don't know if I can say Johan's name here, but it's Johan. We're going to start with that. So like, he's fighting this Canadian guy, Johan, who let's be honest, hasn't fought anybody. Like, he's 6-0, and everybody's super excited about him being 6-0. He's got a flying knee knockout in like 14 seconds in CFFC, but he's largely just fought people he should just absolutely demolish. And the only people he's fought that do seem to have like some skill gave him some trouble at various points. So I actually think Cuts is probably a bad matchup for him. And the other person I will say that I'm definitely in on betting here, because I think his last performance, or actually two performances ago, probably has him a little bit lower ranked than he ought to be. And that's Solomon Renfro. Like, I legitimately think Solomon Renfro is going to be, like, a, not just in the UFC, but, like, a decent UFC fighter. Like, could crack into the top 15 in a very tough welterweight division. Like, I think a lot of people wrote him off after his fight against, it was like some journeyman, but I can't remember his name. But he got rear naked choked in the first round after, you know, like a lot of fanfare coming into the fight about how great he was. And like, he sort of underperformed and was choked out. And since then, like, he went out and got himself another win, looked really good doing it. He's like the most athletic dude you will ever see, in a fight. He's super fast, super strong, and only 24 years old. So, like, I think we're going to see a lot of Solomon Renfro in the future. And because of that recent loss, he's fighting Lee Henry Lilly. And I think he's only betting off at negative 200. And that's really crazy to me. Just for any Solomon Renfro fight on a regional circuit, I think he's going to, like, wash most of the regional out of talent. As a matter of fact, I'd probably take him over both the guys in the main event. If we're being honest, I think he'd beat Evan Cutts, and I think he'd beat Johan Lainesi. I don't know how to say that dude's name.
Yeah, he's from Quebec, so it's probably Lainesi. And you always go, you always have to fade the Canadians.
Right, so definitely fade the Canadian here, too. Yeah, but like, so I actually think Solomon Renfro is like a big deal in this welterweight division and will like be fun to watch later on. And, you know, no offense to the guy he's fighting, but the guy he's fighting is 1-2 in his last three. One of those losses to the guy who just beat Anthony Pettis, Roush Menfeo. And that one's not, you know, all that much of a shame. But, like, he's stepping in there with, like, a young, athletic dude who's going to kick the crap out of him.
And Lee Henry Lilly, who is his opponent, sounds like what, either, like, a future serial killer or a future presidential assassination guy? Anybody who uses a middle name obviously is of that ilk. So
and he's got three names too. So
yeah, exactly. Lee Henry Lowe, exactly. All right. So best prospect in CFFC is Solomon Renfro, you'd say?
Absolutely. Yeah. No doubt.
Very good. All right. So there you go. That's how you get some money on the regional circuit, ladies and gentlemen. Then we're back to the big boys next weekend with Conor McGregor and Dustin Poirier. Before we move on, let me tell you about our last couple sponsors. Underdog. Make sure you head over to underdogfantasy.com and use promo code SGPN for a free $25. You can use the free $25 to enter their Best Ball Mania 2 contest tournament they have there. First place in Best Ball Mania 2 gets you $1 million. That's right. Sign up now for a free shot at $1 million. Drafts are happening constantly, and it's not just the NFL. They also have NBA, MLB, and more. So underdogfantasy.com, promo code SGPN for your chance to win $1 million. And while you're on the interwebs, make sure you download the SGPN app. Our app is now live in the App Store and Google Play Store, and it gives you easy access to all our picks, all our podcasts. You get notifications for all the podcasts. You can get on our promo page to get promos from all the different books, sports books and fantasy providers we have deals with. You can find up-to-the-minute odds. You can find all the news stories. Everything you need is on that there app. So don't forget when you do download it to toss us up an app review and make sure you download the SGPN app today. All right. So I guess the big is UFC news since we last recorded. Actually, is very timely because we're just talking about Cyril Gagné, his biggest win of his career over Alexander Volkov. And what do you know it? He's fighting for an interim title next, which is exactly what fans hate the most, basically, is interim titles. He is fighting, for some reason, interim heavyweight championship against Derek Lewis at UFC 265 in Houston, Texas at the Toyota Center. That's on August the 7th. This is seems to be a case, once again, of the UFC, Dana White and the UFC, like to do their anytime negotiations don't go their way with a fighter, they like to take it into the public and the media, and that's pretty much seems to be the case here with their negotiations with Francis Ngannou, or more precisely, the negotiations with his manager. Dana White's been getting in an online fight with him the past few days. He did just win the title. I told you I couldn't talk today. The title 3 months ago. So it's not like he's not injured, and he seems like he's willing to fight in September. But the UFC machine needs fresh bodies. They need. They decided they need a main event for UFC 265. And if Ngannou's not willing to play ball, then they'll just make up a fake title and put that in the headliner slot. I tweeted a really good, actually, story about this from Jordan Breen. I think he writes for Bloody Elbow now. It's on my Twitter account, Jeff Fox Writer. He basically breaks down how the UFC machine basically works and how rigid they are in their practices. And if a fighter is not willing to play ball, then this is one of the tactics that they like to do. They just they make up a title and they put it at a main event of a card. We already have a real title fight on this card, Amanda Nunes versus Juliana Pena for the women's bantamweight title, but Nunes has not proven to be a real huge needle mover despite being the best female fighter ever, so they obviously felt the need to have another title fight atop this card because they wanted to pack the Toyota Center in Houston, so they put native son Derek Lewis in the main event for a fake title against Ciryl Gane. So that's pretty much where we're at here. So instead of getting Francis Ngannou versus Derek Lewis, we should have got Francis Ngannou versus John Jones, but they got in a spat with John Jones, so that's not happening. Now they got in a spat with Ngannou, so that's not happening. So instead we're getting Ciryl Gane and Derek Lewis for a fake title, and even though the champion is healthy and seemingly ready to fight within a couple months. So did I miss anything, Dan, or is that pretty much how you see it also?
So I have so much to react in there. First of all, I will say I think Amanda Nunes is a big enough draw to headline a card. I think the fact that she's fighting Juliana Pena, a contender that just people could not be lower on, is a big part of why they feel like they need a second title fight here.
Sure.
Like, she just got submitted by a Dutch kickboxer. Like, let's be real. Like, and really submitted by a Dutch kickboxer. So, like, I think that has a lot to do with it. Here's the other thing I will say. I don't care that the UFC makes up interim titles anymore. I don't. I think if that's what they need to do to sell the fights to casual fans, I'm here for it. Like, if you think that you need two title fights on that pay-per-view so the casual fan buys it, like, I'm already going to be watching. You're already going to be watching. All the other writers who are complaining about this are already going to be watching. So if you need a second title fight and your champions aren't ready to go and you need to do an interim title, I'm also cool with that. Like, feel free to do that. And I think that that's a fine business move if that's what they're going to do. Here's where I have a problem with it. If that is your move, how the hell does your champion not know? You know what I mean? Like, how is this a surprise to Francis? If Francis said he's ready in September, and they're like, hey, yo, Francis, we actually need a title fight in August. If we don't have one, we got to make one up. Like, either fight in August, or we're going to do an interim, and then you can have the winner in October, November. Then just leave that in his hands. And he's like, well, I can't fight in August. And they're like, okay, well, we're going to do this interim. We'll catch you in November. If they had done that to Francis, like, could Francis complain? Sure. But, like, should he at that point? No, they're just telling him openly about their business practices, being like, look, we need a title fight. And if we don't have it, we got to make one up. If you're not ready, we're going to make up yours. And, like, if that was the case, I'd be fine with it. But it does seem, like you said, super sketchy and underhanded. And the fact that they're fighting his business manager right now and talking about how much he gets paid, that's the part I have a problem with. Like, the part where this is an active effort to get Francis Ngannou to make less money, a dude who is insanely marketable, to make a little bit less money, like, dude, just pay him. I have no idea what he's asking for. I have no idea what his manager's asking for. But just, like, pay him And if he's not ready to fight on the date you need and you need to do an interim fight, just tell him that and just let him know ahead of time so that he can then make the decision if he wants to rush it or let them crown some, like, goofy number one contender belt.
Yeah, that's basically what interim titles are, or number one contender.
Which is why I don't hate him anymore, right? Like, if that's what they are. Like, we used to, like, for those of you who have not been UFC fans for 10 to 15 or 20 years at this point, we used to have fights that were just number one contender fights, and you didn't have to be like, well, that is what Dana said, but do any of us actually believe it? It used to be, this was a title eliminator. You can even see it in people's Wikipedia page, that it was named a title eliminator fight. And, like, if you had just slapped interim title on all of those fights because the champ wasn't ready for whatever one of those two was a better fighter, nobody would care, right? Like, at this point, I don't care that, like, Tony Ferguson wore an interim belt but not a real one. Like, if you think it's lesser, then you think it's lesser and you don't ever worry about it. And if you think it's equal, well, then you think it's equal and you don't worry about it. So, like, I'm not going to be, like, up in arms that, like, people are like, oh, Surreal Gane is a champ, but he's not a real champ. Like, just don't be upset about it. He won a number one contender belt.
Yeah, that's pretty much what it is. Well, who knows, though? If they're getting a fight with Ngannou now and they're in a fight with Jon Jones, they're pretty much maybe this will be end up being a real title, heavyweight championship belt before you know it, because it's like, who knows when Ngannou's gonna fight now if Dana White doesn't like his manager.
But here's the thing, though, I think the UFC's crazy underhanded. I think they're awful in terms of their business practices and how they treat their employees. But I'll ask you this: have they ever just straight up taken a belt off of somebody contract wise?
In the olden days, I guess, probably, right? Randy Couture, maybe,
yeah,
or someone like
only,
that.
But only with them straight up leaving, right?
Yeah,
like,
that's true.
It was never like, oh, you're not going to take this fight, or this fight, or this fight, or this fight, or this fight. Fine, you're not the champ. Like, if they're going to stay in your company and they haven't hit a pregnant woman with a car, they get to keep their belt. I do agree that this is shitty tactics, and I do agree that it sucks that it's going to take us longer to see Francis now. But, like, ultimately, like, he's still the champ, and nobody's ever, especially being as marketable as he is, I'm not worried about them trying to take the belt off of him.
Yeah. Someone just asked me on Twitter, does this mean, like, we get Francis in the fall? And he's asking if you're going to see Francis and Jones. I'm like, no, you're not going to see Jones anytime soon. Mm-hmm. That ship sailed, I think. And who knows with Ngannou now if they're going to get in fights with him, too. So, yeah. So all they had to do really was bite the bullet on this event, and they could have had a big title fight the very next month. But instead, they are doing what the UFC likes to do. So as for gambling wise, have you looked at the lines for this, or you want to play the game versus Lewis betting line game?
I assume so. I haven't looked at the lines, but I'm gonna take I'll say Surreal Gane as a small favorite at negative. Let's go $145.
You are incorrect. He's a huge. He opened at minus -325.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and he's at minus -275 now, it looks like.
Okay, so he's getting bet down. They're betting the Lewis
guy. Yeah, he's getting bet down, but not huge. It's still, you know, minus -275. But yes, I guess he's only been on the board for, a few hours at this point. But, yeah, he's getting bet down a bit. But it's still a pretty massive line for a heavyweight fight with a guy like Derek Lewis who can slang and bang with the best of them fighting in his hometown.
Yeah, and I think that's the key for why I thought it would be closer, too, is that, like, you have to respect the fact that Derek Lewis knocked out basically what I would consider grappling's version of Surreal Gane, right? Is like, Surreal Gane is a kickboxer who's incredibly intelligent and stays safe, as is Curtis Blaydes, right? Like, he's a grappler who stays insanely safe, and he got knocked out. So, like, you would have to assume that he has some sort of chance to tag him, although I guess grappling gets you a little closer than, you know, kickboxing. But, like, I have to imagine that, like, he's got that puncher's chance, and it's at least worth a look. I would say if you can get Derek Lewis anywhere near plus +250, I think you're getting a steal on that one, too.
Yep. there you go. So that and what do you think is going to happen in this fight? Breaking it down, do you see Gain being? Do you want to be patient with Derek Lewis? Do you want to be in there 25 minutes with him?
I would say you don't want to be in there 25 minutes.
No,
unless he's on his back. And I don't see that happening. Like Ilir Latifi lasted 15 minutes with him, ultimately loses that fight, but barely, and mostly just by putting Derek Lewis on his back. So, like, unless you're doing that, you don't want to be in there for 25 minutes with him. But I will say Gain is a whole different animal when it comes to his technical striking. I could see him really using front kicks, leg kicks, and all that kind of stuff to just keep Derek Lewis extremely at bay.
Yeah, so if gun to your head, as you like to say on your other podcast, sometimes you say it here, but on your other podcast, you are picking Ciryl Gain to win this?
Yeah, if I'm doing I need to pick a winner, I'm picking Ciryl Gain, but I would say right now, where the line currently sits, the value definitely sits on the Derek Lewis side.
Yeah, very, very true. Speaking of UFC's horrible practices, my prediction is Sarah Alper is going to be out of work very, very soon. Have you seen what's going on with her recently?
I have seen. Did you get the latest update, though, or did
yes.
you just get the first
yes.
update? Because the first update is very surprising. The second update is very, very surprising.
Okay, well, we'll see if we're on the same page. So basically, Sarah Alper, low level, not saying that in a negative way, but low level UFC women's flyweight fighter, started a GoFundMe. Because that's what pro athletes have to do, obviously, when they're in the top of their sport, in the top promotion. She had to start a GoFundMe so she could afford to eat food and train to be a UFC fighter. That's because, I don't have it. I should have had it in front of me how much money she's making, because that's what the MMA manifesto is all about, but I don't have how much she's making. How many fights has she won in the UFC? Do you know that off the top of your head, Dan?
Her record? I believe she has not yet won in the UFC. She did win on the Contender Series. That's how she got her fight.
Right.
But I'm pretty sure she lost her debut, and she's only fought twice. I did interview her right before her UFC debut. She is, as her nickname would suggest, far too sweet. She's like the nicest person on the whole planet.
Yes, I remember that interview. So reason I was asking is she probably is making the entry-level amount then if she hasn't won a fight, which would be $10,000. If 10,000 to show up, 10,000 to win. She's fought once. Jessica Rose Clark lost that fight. So she made 10,000 that fight plus, about 30, at that point it was about 3,500 in Reebok sponsorship money. So she would have made $13,500. But that's basically, she didn't make that. She wouldn't have had to pay out a whole for coaches I'm sure she probably has a manager, an agent, training partners. All that stuff. UFC pays for, I think, one or two corner people to come. And if you want to bring more, you have to pay for all that. She didn't make much money. And that was back in September. She's had a bunch of fights fall out since then. And when fights fall out, you do not get paid. UFC only pays your contractor in the UFC's eyes. So you only get paid when you fight. So she's basically made less than $14,000 gross in the last half a year. So, and before that, she had fought, August 2019. So she's barely worked, basically, as a UFC fighter or as a fighter in general. So she started a GoFundMe so she could actually train and get prepared for her next fight against Aaron Blanchfield. Jake Paul, who we haven't mentioned for a long time, which has been nice, but he's the YouTube boxing sensation dude who's been all over the UFC's case about how much they pay fighters. He donated $5,000 to her cause. More importantly, I think, is he shed light on it to put it out there, because she wasn't getting a whole lot of sponsorships up to that point. And then Triller Fight Club, which is who Jake Paul was his past few boxing fights have been with, donated $25,000 and also ripped the UFC for their pay practices, I guess would be the way to say it. So she's well over her $30,000 goal just from those two people there. But they both made a point to drag the UFC through the mud, which is why I'm saying Sarah Alper is going to be looking for a new job very, very soon, because that's the way UFC operates. They're going to fire her. It since she made them look bad, just like they got rid of Leslie Smith because she was trying to get a union going or an association going.
So I'll say this. I think Sarah Elpar is probably in a safer spot than Leslie Smith was. Like, Smith was actively...
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Yeah, Smith was actively trying to unionize a large group of people who could all come together and, you know, try to put, you know, the UFC into, you know, acting like an actual company or a sports organization that actually treats their athletes well. And they didn't. And so then they fired her. And the thing I will say about what Alpar has done, like, she's not the first UFC fighter to start a GoFundMe to help their training. Like, and that's terrible to say. Like, absolutely, positively terrible to say that, like, multiple of these people have needed, you know, GoFundMes or will have to work. I mean, like, Jeff Neal, up until very recently, was a server at Texas Roadhouse. Like, it's incredible that, like, he achieved the status he did in the sport and still was working a second job. And, like, we know more than that, that are doing more than one job. So she's not the first. And I don't know that the UFC will find fault in her doing it. But it does, like, she's definitely in worse shape than other people who've had GoFundMes because of who responded to it.
Yeah.
But I don't think she's, like, if she loses this fight to Erin Blanchfield, and man, do I love Sarah Elpar, but, like, Erin Blanchfield's a terrible matchup. Like, she's such a beast. Like, Erin Blanchfield's really freaking good. Like, if she loses to Erin Blanchfield, I don't necessarily know that that is 100% a death sentence in that, like, I don't know that the UFC will 100% blame her for, like, Jake Paul taking this thing over.
Yeah, it's definitely not a good look for them. It's inadvertently not a good look for her. It's not her fault. And she's been very careful not to blame the UFC for any of this. She states rightfully that she's paid way more in the UFC than she has in anywhere else in her career, but it's basically just, you know, shines light on them. They want to act like they're a rival to all the big sports. They're as big as the NFL, but their fighters are out having basically to beg for money, and YouTube stars and fake celebrity fight leagues are taking up their cause. So, like I said, make it clear she didn't do anything wrong, but I'm hoping the UFC doesn't blame her for this, because she's shed a light inadvertently on the dirty side of their business.
Yeah, and I can, like I said, I definitely could see them handling it worse than they did other GoFundMes, but I think ultimately she is going to be fine. And like I said, I do anticipate her losing this one. Some people 0-2 get fired all the time. But I don't think it's 100% a death sentence.
Yeah, but and will this change how the UFC pays? No, it won't, because they don't have to change. They're still making lots of money. Fighters are still begging to fight for them. There's no union, so they can basically they can just keep making up interim belts if they need to, if they don't want to pay people. So they will keep paying people $10,000 to show, and it's up to what, $4,000 for the sponsorship pay, and that could be all a fighter makes in a year would be $14,000. So why change if you don't have to? And if you know, you look pretty scummy as it is, then why change your practices?
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of been the thing about the UFC, right? Like, if they're going to keep handling their pay badly and nobody's going to make them do anything about it, why would you? Like, there's no reason for them to change.
Yep. So, anyhow, hopefully two sweet wins, and then we'll see what happens. So, nothing against any other big MMA news. Let me think. Sean O'Malley has a new he's fighting someone from your neck of the woods, Massachusetts. Short notice fight on next week's pay-per-view. Do you know anything about the guy who's stepping in to fight him?
I know a lot of things about the guy who's stepping in
to fight him. What a surprise.
I was actually at Chris Motino's professional debut, CES 38, which, despite the fact that CES usually happens in Twin River Casino, was actually happening in Foxwoods Casino, which is in Connecticut instead of Rhode Island, for like a very rare event in Connecticut instead of Rhode Island. So I was actually at his pro debut. He was the first fight of the night. Everybody was hyping him up as a hyper prospect. he looked good, not great, in that fight, and everybody afterwards was kind of like, we kind of expected Chris Martino to look better, because he had a long amateur career in the Northeast region, particularly in Cage Titans. I'd seen him a bunch then, and then I saw him a little bit later on, I think it was CS41, which is headlined by Matt Bassett, if I'm not mistaken, and he landed a nasty, head kick, 10 seconds in or something like that. So, yeah, I've actually seen Chris Martino live a bunch of times. He's a guy who, if I'm being real honest, people had much higher hopes for him to move more quickly. But he took, not one, but, a bunch of prospect losses. And seems to grow every single time from him. He's looked really good his last two times out, including once against his second to last time out, he fought Shale Sonnen's guy. Shale Sonnen said he would fly this dude anywhere in the world to get more fights because everybody was denying him fights. CES was like, sure, Shale, send him up here and then let Chris Martino beat the shit out of him. So Chris Martino's a legit guy. It'll be interesting to see what he does with Sean O'Malley. I gotta imagine Sean O'Malley is a freaking sizable favorite in this one, but Martino can wrestle a little bit and can definitely take a punch. He is a guy who has taken a lot of heavy punches in his career. So I think he will make it way more competitive and probably pick up a lot of fans in a fight with Sean O'Malley.
All right, guess the odds, Dan. I have them on my screen.
I'm going to say O'Malley. Oh, man, they haven't had time to have, sharps come in and dump, grands on him. So let's say negative 600.
Minus 800, minus 900. And sharp, he opened at minus 500, so the sharps are on it, Dan.
Oh, they're already on it. So I was right. Yeah. If they hadn't had enough time, we might still be at negative 600, but they had enough time. So that's my bad for not realizing they had jumped on that earlier.
Exactly. So it looks like the UFC, a lot of big names offered to step into this fight, but the fact that they're taking their guy off the regional scene that you describe as good, not great, probably means they want Sean O'Malley's star to continue to rise despite the dumb things he says.
Well, I would say this too. That was already a case for me. A lot of people were anytime somebody was offering to step in, Tim Elliott's offered to step in, go up to 135 and fight Sean O'Malley. People were get the hell out of here. You suck. That's the Twitter reaction. Tim Elliott's better than Luis Smolka, who O'Malley was supposed to fight. And if I'm being real honest, Chris Martino might be better than Luis Smolka. Right? I don't mean to be mean to Luis Smolka. He's just not very good, right? Look at his record in the UFC. There's nothing there that jumps out that makes you say, man, Smolka is a killer or Smolka is a savage. He did beat Jose Alberto Quinonez in his last fight, but before that he was choked out by Casey Kenney. He beat Ryan McDonald, who nobody's ever heard of. Before that, he got choked out by Matt Schnell down at Flyweight. So, nobody's looking at Luis Smolka and being like, man, this guy is a murderer. He deserved the Sean O'Malley fight. But, now everybody's like, oh, they picked the guy off the regional scene. They had pretty much already picked the guy off the regional scene, right? They picked Smolka.
Yeah.
Smolka was one fight away from being fired if he lost that Quinonez fight. Quinonez did get fired and wound up fighting for that XFC down in Florida against the guy from Rhode Island, Andre Sukumta. So, and he lost that fight too, right? He didn't even win that fight. So, Smolka was not a big step up for O'Malley anyway. So they were already kind of playing into his matchmaking and his star rising. But yeah, I agree. The fact that this didn't wind up being Ricky Simon at 140 or, Brian Kelleher or somebody like that. There's a reason it's Martino.
It should be Sean O'Malley versus heroin. I guess he says he could take heroin and not get hooked. So that would be the fight we want to see, right?
Oof.
I got an oof for that one.
I'm going to give you the oof on that one and not comment on Sean O'Malley's heroin takes.
Hey, it's not my take. It's his take. That'd be very clear. All right. With tomorrow being Canada Day, I thought, hey, that's what we need to put some Canadian content on the podcast here. So greatest Canadian fighter of all time. I know it's a tough one, Dan. Who do you think the greatest of all time is?
It's definitely Dan Staton.
I think it gets a little interesting after that. Who do you think is the – oh, they have Brock Lesnar listed as Canadian because he lives in Canada. But, no, well, because he fights out of Saskatchewan now. But he has dual citizenship. So, technically, is he the second-best Canadian fighter? Maybe. Who do you think the second-best of all
Canadian
time?
He has Canadian citizenship.
He does, yeah, because he lives in Canada. His kids are probably Canadian. He's been there for a while. So.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. Now, who do you – now, this is kind of tough. Who do you think, based on accomplishments, not like all – because most of us are agreeing that modern-day fighters would destroy fighters from, what, 20, 25 years ago. But based on accomplishments, who do you think is the second greatest fighter out of Canada? There's no right or wrong answer, but
– I think I'm going to lean Patrick Côté.
Yeah, really?
Yeah, it's like not for anything. He had, like – some really stellar runs that I think people forget about. Like, you know, like, I mean, like, leading up to that fight with Anderson Silva.
Yeah.
You know, like, he beat Kendall Grove, Ricardo Almeida. You know, like, he beat a whole bunch of guys in there. I mean, like, he had a split decision with Chris Lieben, which is a pretty good one. Back in the day, he fought Tito Ortiz. He didn't win that one, but he did fight Tito Ortiz. So he fought Tito Ortiz and Anderson Silva and Wonder Boy and Cowboy Cerrone. You know, he knocked out Ben Saunders. I'm trying to think of other guys he fought. Did he fight Joe Diesel Riggs at one point in time?
I feel like sounds like he probably should have, at least.
Yeah, like, everybody should have fought Joe Riggs at some point. But, like, yeah, like, maybe Patrick Côté? I'm trying to think of other ones. Like, it is, man.
Isn't Rory McDonald the obvious answer?
Yeah, but, like, oh, okay, so.
Maybe not obvious. Like,
I'll entertain that as an option, but, like, what are Rory McDonald's accomplishments? Like, again, a good run to a title fight.
Bellator champ.
I guess Bellator. Are we gonna count that? But like,
future PFL champ.
Yeah. Did he lose his? He lost his Bellator belt, right?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, or Douglas Lima.
Yeah,
and a loss.
Right.
It wasn't a loss to Gleison Tebow, but like, call it a loss to Gleison Tebow.
Oh, that's right. It's on a losing streak. I forgot.
I mean, like, he did draw John Fitch in Bellator in order to retain his title and then didn't have to fight him again because it was in a weird tournament and he advanced on the draw. He had a winning streak that led him to a fight with Robbie Lawler where he got knocked out. He also lost to Wonder Boy. He lost to Robbie Lawler twice. Man, I guess he's got a win against, like, the most watched BJ Penn. Do we want to count his win to Nate Diaz being a big one? I mean, like, he's a decent answer, too, but I think Patrick Côté is underrated as an option there. Like,
yeah.
Not that – right there with, like, 2A and 2B with Rory Mack.
Yeah, I didn't even think of him. So there you go. That is underrated. Just I'll throw some other names up before we go home. Gary Goodrich, UFC 8 finalist, UFC 10 semifinalist, K-1 champ. Brock Lesnar, of course.
Get out of here with that Brock Lesnar.
Can't forget Brock Lesnar.
We're gonna
take him. Who else was I thinking? Obviously, there's still plenty that are.
I'm actually gonna take back my answer. I'm gonna take back Patrick Côté, and
yep.
I'm gonna deny your Rory Mack answer.
Yep. See if you go with the guy I was thinking.
I think I'm not going to because I think I'm gonna take a gal. What about Sarah Kaufman?
Yep. Yeah,
because
very good pick, yep.
Sarah Kaufman has wins over Megumi Yabushita, who was like a upcoming women's idol. You laugh, of course. Like, she was like Megumi Yabushita was like a big name in women's MMA in the early days. She KO'd Roxanne Modafari with a slam. She beat Misha Tate, Shayna Baszler, Leslie Smith. Let's see, who else did she beat? She fought Valentina Shevchenko and Roxy. She was the Invicta Bantamweight champ, or currently, I mean, I guess she won it and she never defended it, and now she's in PFL. She also is coming off of a PFL loss, so, like, maybe less exciting. She beat Alexis Davis, Valerie Letourneau. Like, she is, beating Misha Tate, I mean, automatically puts her in that conversation. She was the Strikeforce champ.
Yep. Yeah, no, she's definitely, yeah, I didn't even think of her, but I should have, you're right. Name I was thinking was Carlos Newton, Remember Carlos Newton? He was the UFC welterweight champion.
He won the welterweight title with a schoolboy bulldog choke over Pat Miletich, which, like, I guess he deserves extra points for choking out Pat Miletich because everybody should choke out Pat Miletich.
Exactly. And that, and then he lost to Matt Hughes. Yeah, and that kind of, Matt Hughes ended up getting the title when Miletich was supposed to get a title rematch, and his teammate Matt Hughes stepped up instead, and the rest is history. So, who else today? Mark Hominick gave Jose Aldo a very good fight.
Not only did he give Jose Aldo a really good fight, his fight with Eve Edwards or Eve Jabouin? Mixing up my Eves. Do you have Mark Hominick's Wikipedia page in front of you?
I can, yeah.
He fought one of the ones that had the baby grow out of his head. That was the Aldo fight.
Right, yeah. Okay, yes.
Oh, he fought Eve Jabouin. I was right. It was Eve Jabouin, Eve Edwards. But, like, that fight, WEC 49, go back and watch it on Fight Pass. Incredible 2.5-round fight. So much fun to watch. I would say in terms of, like, straight watchability, Mark Hominick was probably right up there near the top.
Yep. Other note, Felicia Spencer.
He also fought Eve Edwards. Hang on a second.
Yeah. Oh, really?
He fought Eve Jabouin and Eve Edwards.
So maybe watch both the fights just to be safe, everyone, to make sure.
Yeah, make sure you catch both of those.
We have Felicia Spencer. We haven't mentioned her. She was the Invicta champ. Hasn't done so great in the UFC, but she doesn't really have much of a competition to fight against, so not much of a fight class. Alexis Davis, obviously, you mentioned her before. She was a one of Ronda Rousey's victims. But yeah, I miss Sarah Coffin for sure. She's definitely one to speak of. And then that's pretty much it that I can really, really think of. Who do you think the best? Do you have a Canadian prospect that you like at this point or not? Because they're really, like, I've been asked this, like, who's going to take the mantle from now that GSP's gone? And it was supposed to be Rory, and he's kind of faltered. He really, like, his resume is still, you know, makes him second or third best Canadian of all time, but he seemed like he was the second coming and didn't really pan out. And he's got a lot of wear and tear on him now. So you think that's probably the end of him as a top guy.
Yeah, I don't think there's a real, like, mantle place person, but actually I mentioned one earlier on the show when we were talking about how much I like CFFC. I mentioned the name Jasmine Jesu DeVicious out of CFFC. She's a Canadian.
All right,
I want to say she fights for, is it Niagara Top Team she fights out of? I could be wrong. But she is fighting on the Contender Series. She's only got one loss on her career, and to be honest, it was if we're allowing me to do my revisionist history, she didn't lose that fight. But, like, I have been high on her as a prospect for quite some time. She's a flyweight, but she's very, very long. So it is Niagara Top Team. I looked it up. She's very, very long. And the person who beat her by that split decision and eventually became the champ is the one fighting Sajara Eubanks. So, like, clearly they feel pretty high about her having won a split decision over Jesu DeVicious. And Jesu DeVicious, if I'm not mistaken, is fighting in September on Contender Series. So you should see her in the UFC pretty quick. And I actually think she's better than the one who's going to fight Sajara Eubanks.
Well, there you go. Maybe we have a future Canadian hope amongst our ranks. There really is no one in the UFC really that I'm super stoked on that's Canadian at this point. Who do you think the best Canadian in the UFC is right now? Tanner Boser, Felicia Spencer. We don't really have a whole lot of ones that you can really – well, Jillian Robertson's good.
She's probably the most exciting prospect because she's so young.
Right.
But, like, you're right. Like, who's the closest to, like, being a champ right now? And, like, the answer is probably Tanner Boser. Like, it's a thin division and, like, nobody's there. But, like, the bottom line is you just don't really have anybody close to being a champion. You know, like, people were really high on Misha Cirkunov for a while, who was actually born in Latvia, but he's a Canadian, right? Like, But, like, ultimately, he kind of petered out and disappeared into nowhere. And, yeah, like, Jesse Ronson stepped in and had that, like, really amazing fight and then tested positive for, like, what, 3 different kinds of steroids or something like that.
No, it's from the moose meat. It's from the moose meat up here he was eating. That's all.
Yeah, John McDessie. Because
we all eat moose.
John McDessie's fun to watch, but he's kind of old now, right? Like,
yeah.
Is he really old?
Well, he's got a lot of wear and tear, at least. He's probably not old.
Yeah.
For a fighter, he's
old. You know who it's... And granted, he's coming off a loss, so this is going to sound bad, too. Hakeem Dawodu is a good pick, too.
Yeah, because
I think he had a 5-fight winning streak until he just got out-wrestled by Movsar Evloev. So, like... Maybe Hakeem Dawodu. He's probably more exciting and a better young prospect than Jillian Robertson, even.
Well, the next time we record is... 4th of July, so we'll do this for U.S. fighters, too. How about
the best American fighters.
Exactly. The best American. Yeah, that shouldn't take us very long at all, right? It's only fair. If we do it for Canada, we can do it for the States, too.
I look forward to it.
All right. Until we meet you again, make sure you follow us on Twitter, Jeff Fox Writer, Gumby Vreeland. Read all our stuff in sportsgamblingpodcast.com and on MMA-manifesto.com. Download the SGPN app, obviously, and subscribe to our podcast, MMA Gambling Podcast. I think that's all the rules and homework I have to give you. I'm going to let Dan take you out this time because I think I've done it 2 or 3 weeks in a row. So let's see what Dan's got planned for us today.
I'm David Goodby Vreeland. He's Juicy Jeff Fox, and we'd like to wish you a happy Canada Day.
Oh, so nice. Have a juicy one, everyone.